Hi there, and welcome to the Man in the Van podcast, your regular audio drive time companion, where our main aim is education through a conversation. Through our conversations, delve deep into all things related to the tradesperson contracting community, from news to education to industry happenings, helping you do better business while building a better and improved South African tradesman and women contracting community. Thanks for tuning in. Let's start the conversation.
A very warm welcome to our audience members. My name is Willem Klopper. I'm your host, and in this episode, I'm having a conversation with members from IOPSA, and we will be discussing IOPSA's involvement in training within the plumbing sector. Now, with me in studio, I have my two anchors, Mr. Steve Brown from IOPSA, as well as Ms. Lorraine Moy, also from IOPSA. Then I have my two guests, Mr. Kwaku Mpepo, as well as Mr. Nick Jaber, both also from IOPSA. Just before we give our guests the opportunity to introduce themselves, let's hit the brakes. I'd like to remind our audience that this episode is proudly brought to you by Articulated Plumber. Just before I fire away with all the other questions that I have, I would just like for our guests to introduce themselves to the audience. Kwaku, can we start with you? If you could just give the audience a little bit of a background about yourself, who you are, what your history is within the industry, why you've decided to join the industry, and what your current role is within the industry now.
Thank you, Vadim. My full name is Kwaku Mpepo. I'm currently the training manager. I'm the training manager at the Institute of Plumbing South Africa. So I've been in the training industry for quite a while. We call it skills development. I've been in the skills development industry for quite a bit of time. So before I joined IOPSA, I was working for another association called the Master Builders Association, which is it's an association just like IOPSA. The difference is that it's an association of main contractors. Prior to that, I was working for a company called DHL, which is a courier company. I'm sure you know about the company. I was also in the training specialist there, assisting with skills development, advising the company, helping them with their workplace skills plans, dealing with the sitters, dealing with training providers, dealing with material development from various companies that were assisting us. And prior to that, I was at Avbob in the same kind of role, but a bit more junior. And before that, I had been working for a consulting company, which is a training company called King Costin Associates, which is where I started my proper, training, career. But my job, my first job, I started as a teacher and then branched out to training. So currently at IOPSA, I'm busy managing different projects. Mainly the big ones are the apprenticeships, which I will talk about. One of the big projects that I'm dealing with, it's called the Dual System Pilot Project. I'll talk more a little bit later about it. Yeah. That's me.
Thank you, Kwaku. Nick, would you mind to just introduce yourself very briefly to the audience, please?
Good morning to the panel supporting this podcast recording. I'm Nick Jube. I'm a proud PRB registered master plumber. I have more than 40 years of plumbing experience, with the majority of these years spent in the broad sense of training and development. So after my initial 10 years of hard contracting plumbing work, I had the opportunity to develop 100 youth trainees into the small building contractor field. And this is where the training and development field appealed to me more. And I have since then focused on that training and development as my main passion. I've joined IOPSA as the National Training Manager in 2013, which position I'm still having and looking after the training in the broad field within IOPSA.
Both of you mentioned training at IOPSA. Can I just ask, Kwaku, you mentioned one project specifically that you're busy with. You said it's the Dual
System Pilot Project.
dual system pilot project. I know that IOPSA is a membership organization, and it's mostly companies that register or become members of IOPSA. So who do you give training to, or who is the training that you mention that you speak of? Who is it aimed at?
Okay. So the apprentices themselves are either drawn from the forwarded to us by employers. Ideally, that's what we like. We don't really like receiving apprentices from the street and nobody knows about them. Ideally, we want the companies. We invite the companies and say, look, do you have any guys with potential that you'd like to put on the program? And they send us their CVs, and then obviously we take them through the process. But others come through the partner colleges. There are colleges that participate in the apprenticeship program across the country. So some come through the college. They would be people that may have been part of other programs, could be civil engineering or whatever, but then they identify plumbing as their passion. Some are just you know, random guys that, you know, just, that come through parents that know IOPSA, but mainly they come through those two different channels. Yeah.
All right. So it's the individuals that you are looking at.
Yeah.
Do you present training to them from a theoretical perspective as well, or is it mainly focused at the practical side? From which angle does IOPSA training step in?
So the apprenticeship program itself, it's a 3-year program, and it focuses on both theory and on the job training. And so the on the job part is done by the host employer. We call them the host employer, the company that hosts the apprentice during the employer block, the on the job block. So they rotate between the company, and then the theory is handled by the college, the training college. So the training college's responsibility is that of doing theory plus simulations. So they keep on rotating like that. They'll be with an employer for about a month, and then, you know, another month with the college. They keep on, you know, changing like that the whole 3 years until they complete. Yeah.
Does that entail some kind of a placement that is organized from IOPSA's side?
Yeah, definitely. IOPSA is the project manager or the lead employer in the mix. We are the ones that are responsible to actually make the call out to the industry and say, hey, IOPSA members, we've got 10 learners in the Ekurhuleni area. Would you like to mentor 5? You know, would you like to mentor 2? And so we are responsible for that part. We place them in different companies across, you know, across the country, depending on where they live, obviously. If a guy lives in Pretoria, we look for an employer that has sites in Pretoria, and so on and so forth, yeah.
So what other key projects are currently running in the training division of IOPSA?
Okay. So we've got the DSPP, which I just mentioned now, and then we've got the COS project, which is the Centers of Specialization. So the Centers of Specialization is a different project, kind of similar, but, you know, a bit different in the sense that they are focused, you know, colleges across the country, which are referred to as centers or, you know, specializing colleges in particular trades. So you would have, it's not just plumbing. There's plumbing, there's millwrights, there's boilermakers, and so it's 13 priority trades that were identified by the, you know, the National Department of Higher Education as, you know, major trades that the country needs to make sure that it's, you know, it focuses on. So it's Centers of Specialization, that's the other project. And we do different other, I'm sure Nick will touch on other projects, but the top, the if you like, flagship projects are those two. Yeah.
Kwaku, you mentioned government departments, and which government departments are involved in this?
Okay.
Which?
So the Department of Higher Education and Training is the funder through the National Skills Fund. and you have the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, or the QCTO. So though that's the body, the regulatory body that looks after the certification. That's where the occupational qualification plumber sits. It sits with the QCTO. You've got the CETAs, in the case, for example, of COS, the COS project that I mentioned. The funding comes through the CETAs. And the other stakeholder from the government side is the colleges. So the college, when I mentioned colleges, none of the colleges that we work with are private colleges. All of them are, you know, public TVET colleges.
If a guy decides that he wants plumbing, to follow plumbing as a career, he has to find an institution that can give him the theoretical training, like one of the TVET colleges. And does he approach IOPSA first? Does he approach the college first? And if he's looking to apply for subsidy, what route does he follow? How does that work?
Everything starts with IOPSA from the project management side. So we are the ones that invite the learners to come and be part of the project. We're the ones that initiate the whole process of selection, working very closely with the colleges. It's a fully funded program, so none of the learners have to apply for funding. The funding is ready. It's all about us finding the learner. Funding takes care of the stipend. It takes care of their PPE. Takes care of the toolboxes. It also takes care of the medicals. So that there's no burden at all on the employer. All we need from the employer is to host the learners, mentor the learners. So that's one of the marketing tools that we use when we talk to employers and say, look, there's no financial burden on you. All we want is, you know, mentor the guys. And some employers do find the value. Yeah.
We're looking at the different projects that you and Nick have touched on. Can you give us some highs and lows of each of these projects?
When an intake comes through, most of the time it's usually beginning of the year or towards the end of a previous year. So you find that there's enthusiasm there. We've got a lot of applicants, and we shortlist and we take the guys that we want to take, who have gone through the selection and passed and so on. So during the first year, we experience, especially towards the sixth month, up until the end of the first year, you know, high dropout rates. Although they would have thought that they want to be plumbers, at some point they discover that, no, I don't think I want to be a plumber. So they drop out. Secondly, many learners that join the program are people that have never really been exposed to the world of work. And you find issues of workplace readiness. They don't know how to talk to the boss. They don't know but although we do the orientation, I mean, we prepare them, but you find that somebody doesn't have a background. They may even be from the family background. You know, people did what they always like to do. So we find ourselves being parents sometimes. It's very, very challenging. Leads to unnecessary, you know, unhappiness from employers that we work so hard to find so we can place them. And absenteeism and things of that nature. Some of them do lead to disciplinary hearings and people having to be dismissed. And so there's that whole HR, you know, aspect to what we do. It's not too much of a burden. It's just that many times, because there's many stakeholders, imagine we are an industry body. Our employers are our members. Their relationship, how our apprentices represent IOPSA when they are on the floor at that company, is extremely important. There's a bearing on how we are seen. So because there's many stakeholders that need to be kept happy, there are challenges there, but we do well to make sure that we, you know, we're equal to the task. Yeah.
Just in terms of that, Kwaku, maybe for Nick to jump in and just add. I mean, if we're looking at this, you know, the fallout in terms of those that are attending through 6 months and we're talking through projects. Nick, in your experience, is this the same in terms of the formal sector? I'm not saying informal or formal sector, but for those apprentices that are going through other channels and through other colleges, is this the same type of thing within those aspects of those apprentices or learners? Is it a common sort of problem that occurs with learners that get to a point in their sort of duration of time spent that they decide this is not for them?
I think if you go to the previous dispensation of apprentices, the selection criteria and the makeup or the attitude of the apprentice was more focused on plumbing. It was more work ready in comparison to our learners that we have gone through some form of selection process. And if you compare the two methodologies, you'll find that the traditional way, the retention of apprentices is much higher than what we presently have, as Kwaku has mentioned, with these individuals. I mean, from a real serious misdemeanors to individuals that just comes and say, thank you, I have had enough of this plumbing, and then bomb out halfway through or 3 or 4 months down the road of the program. Because the system that is used where apprentices is paid a stipend with fairly rigid rules, you find that many of these students in the DSP and in the CAS project is more of chasing stipends than what they are serious about becoming an artisan.
So, Nick, sorry, then, you know, again, in terms of that, you know, how are these students replaced, or are they replaced? So if you start off with 30 and, you know, 6 of them go 6 months in, you know, do they get replaced, or does it just, you know, stop to that, or what is that process? Do they then have others that are brought in, and what could be changed? You know, I understand you're saying about the stipend, you know, and Kwaku also, from your side of things, I mean, obviously unemployment in the country is fairly high, and obviously try and get these people in. Is there anything that we're doing to try and narrow that? When I was at school, for the 2 days that I went, we had a vocational guidance teacher that would go through these principles in terms of should you be an architect, lawyer, plumber, whatever. But, you know, are those things, I know you've gone through those specifics, but is that something that's happening or is going to be looked at sort of further down the line, you know, in terms of the project?
Because of our present rules, you can replace an individual within the first month of the project. If the project start date has proceeded beyond the first month or 1 month, then there's no replacement, so then the number just decreases. If you look at the DSP that kicked off 2 years prior to the Centers of Specialization program, which is an evolvement of the DSP project, your dropout on the CAS project is much less than what it is on the DSP project as presently, which indicates that the methodology used to select with guidance, with a more stringent aptitude tests, is the way to go. And you will find that if you compare the two projects, the employers are supposed to be in the driver's seat, but there's a whole lot of contractual arrangements that inhibits that take up by the host employers. But for going forward, one needs to ensure that that guidance that you refer to is done in a little bit more detail together with aptitude tests to ensure that the individuals will find their way within the plumbing industry.
I just wanted to just query, in terms of with the drop-ups and all that, is it because of plumbing in itself as a vocation, or is it because of the employer? Is it in terms of what is it exactly? What has been the main thing that the guys have said, why they're dropping out of the programs? And then the second part of that question, is it more guys that are dropping out, or is it girls? Because I know your programs, you know, you have both an intake of females and males. So are you retaining, which gender you're retaining more?
I think the drop-off is primarily coming from the participant. The employers have got a job to do and they have to have an output. The misconception or perception of the apprentice that this is a nice job and it will work is the disillusion sometimes is the main cause. There is no clear indication in terms of males and females that the drop-off is higher with one or the other one. It is pretty across the board much the same between the two, between males and females.
Now, just to add one of the drivers to the dropout, the dropout rate, you know, Nick mentioned the issue of stipends. I'll just give an example just to show you that sometimes some of the applicants, they just apply because they want a stipend. And the stipend is seen as some sort of a salary, you know, by some of them. As a matter of fact, we get calls from clothing shops, you know, that need details of our employees who have accounts and we need to prove that they are apprentices. So some of them even support their families with a stipend. So the stipend is seen as the apprenticeship is a job, you know, as a salary. And then the other driver is with the selection process. If the selection has some loopholes, you're likely the quality of the apprentice is going to be affected. So, for example, some of them, the learners who have left, they were doing a different program before they became apprentices. Somebody was doing, for example, civil engineering. I mean, if you're doing your second year in civil engineering, and then you start applying to become an apprentice as a plumber, something is not quite right there. So we have found that people were doing something that they thought was much cooler or better, and then they try plumbing and they discover plumbing is not fun at all. Nothing sexy about it. So let me rather go back to something.
Yeah. Okay. When individuals are selected or candidates are selected, do they also sign some form of contract with IOPSA? And is it stipulated anywhere in that contract that they do sign that the stipend is sort of refundable if they should drop out of the project at a certain period of time, if it's early on or whatever the case may be, and if it's found that perhaps they may have abused the system or the opportunity just purely for the sake of the stipend?
As much as there are contracts, there's a contract between the learner and the sitter and the, you know, an IOPSA as the lead employer. There's also another contract, which is an employment contract between IOPSA and the apprentice. Yeah, as much as there are those contracts, unfortunately, there's no clause that, you know, ties that forces the apprentice to stay on the program, and there are no repercussions such as the ones that you just mentioned. Nobody will be, you know, told that they need to pay back the money that they've wasted, which leaves, you know, us with only one option. We just have to work harder, not just us as the lead employer, but also the employers have to help us, you know, by giving us names of people that they know. I mean, I find that an apprentice that has been sent to us by an employer who has worked with them for about a year, not knowing about an apprenticeship program, and then later knows about it, and then they send the guy to us, those guys stay on. Why? Because there was a determination much earlier that this is a definite plumber. They've watched him. All they needed is an opportunity, and then we jump in. That always works.
He's already had the opportunity to turn around and drop out of the industry, the plumbing sector, as a career, because he's already worked for a plumbing company for a period of time. So he had ample time to decide if it's for him or not.
And just before we continue the conversation, it's time to hit the brakes again.
Don't forget to download the all-new and improved App Plumber from the Google Play Store. All your plumbing solutions are just a click away, exclusively for Android users.
Welcome back. Now, to continue our discussion, I would like to ask the following question. Are there any incentives for companies that do take apprentices?
From an incentive for the host employers, if one looks at various components, they achieve or they obtain labor at a relatively low cost. They can increase their productivity by having additional labor in this apprentice as it is. In this process of an apprentice being mentored on the job, they find that there is upskilling of their staff, the supervisors, etc., that takes place. They contribute towards the sustainability of our industry, and at the end, they also add to their bottom line. However, I think one of the more important components, we spoke about the recruitment and how do you go through a stringent recruitment and selection process. Now, presently, this is a sort of a one-day operation. And it's sometimes very difficult to make a very good informed decision on the profile of an individual. So therefore, for a host employer, by accommodating an apprentice, you have months, maybe you have 2 years, maybe you have 3 years of an opportunity to, in actual fact, screen an apprentice, and then at the end, after the apprentice contract is completed, then offer the individual a permanent position. And we do find, we're in our final year of the DSP project, that there's at least 4 learners stroke apprentices that is in line through the host employers that says, I want that apprentice and I want to offer him a permanent position. So on that basis, it also helps you have, they fit into the culture of the organization. So the employer, the host employer's benefit is that in this process of apprenticeship, the individual is not only screened, but it's also formed to fit into the culture of that specific organization.
Just to ask a question regarding that, Nick. So if an apprentice is tied to this company for however long, is it that you tie to that person or that apprentice forever, or is it you move the apprentices around?
Now, we do have to move them around because there's a curriculum that specifies the training components, and if a host employer cannot accommodate on-the-job training for all of those specified components, as IOPSA, as the project manager, as the lead employer, we have to move them around to ensure that they do get the exposure in all the components as prescribed by the curriculum for that spring. But it's done in terms of a rollout plan that is planned and consulted with the learner, the host employer, and the training provider.
Nick, you've now touched on different components in a curriculum of the training that needs to be given to individuals. Surely there must be some complication with finding placement. I mean, what if a candidate has had training to a specific level in theory, and now he has to continue with the practical side of from where he's left off at the college? Surely there must be some complication to find a placement for him within the company that has that aspect, that can offer him that specific aspect of physical training, to match the two up, the actual physical training with the theory that he's, the level where he's reached with his theory, to match the two with each other. Do you experience complications with that, Kwaku?
Okay, yeah, it happens, and so with the rotation of the learners from the college to the employer. One other very important thing is the fact that this is the approach is integration of theory and practice, and so the college doesn't work in isolation from the employer. So there is, you know, communication between the parties all the time. So in a company, there will be somebody called a mentor, at the college, there is the facilitator. So the two from time to time, you know, according to the structure of the program, are supposed to be talking to each other regarding the progress of the learner. So that takes care of your question. So in other words, the company has to know what theory has been covered at the college and what is expected of him. If there are any complications between the mentor and the facilitator, you know, there has to be communication as to what needs to be done to up the level of the learner. Yeah.
I mean, a plumbing company can specialize more in, let's say, for instance, solar installations, where they're more than willing to take on apprentices. But now the apprentices that are available are more, their theoretical training may have involved piping part in bathrooms rather than your solar installation on a roof. Does that offer some difficulty in placing the two then? Because, I mean, the company is willing to take on apprentices, but they would like somebody who's got maybe theoretical understanding of the line of plumbing that they specialize in, like, for instance, the solar installation.
Well, you're correct that the biggest challenge is that sequencing and to have a match between theoretical training that has taken place in a period followed by then a similar type of practical exposure or on-the-job experience that you have. It does create a major challenge within the present system that we have. But the training methodology has also evolved a little bit, and we are presently, from IOPSA side, capacitating the facilitators at these training centers to overcome that type of challenge, to move to what is called project-based training, where the theoretical component is taken and integrated to a more of a real-life situation in the training component. So if you talk like with you had your solar, is you would create a sort of a scenario. Yeah, is the client, and the client wants to have a solar, and now please come and advise. And then you go through the training from how big must the solar be, depending on the number of people, what type of pipe am I going to use, what type of system am I going to use, and you draw the theoretical component into a practical solution, and the facilitator will then adjudicate as they go along. And that sort of eliminates this challenge that you've referred to. But again, it's a process to adapt the training methodology to be successful within the specified curriculum.
Speaking of the apprentices and the, let's, you can call them students, that have been to the colleges, do you have an indication of numbers, the numbers of the quantity of students that come out of the colleges and that are ready to be accepted as apprentices with companies?
Previously, there wasn't a determination. Any individual or learner or apprentice could go to any training provider and enroll for a plumbing course in this instance. Presently, with the new occupational qualification, no training provider, whether it's a public TVET college or a private provider, is permitted to register a student or an apprentice unless there is a accompanied employer. In other words, employment possibility does exist. Now, when you have then the training provider, the learner stroke apprentice and the employer together, then the process can carry on. Now, in terms of numbers, you will see that the IOPSA planned that we want to reach about 500 of these apprentices per year. And we're probably about halfway between the two programs, where our present centers of specialization has got 48 of these, and the DSP is 127, and then we have some other smaller projects that makes up close to our 250 per year that we presently have in the system. But we need to increase that to, let's call it, meet the demand, that we need to ensure that the employer demands the actual training. Otherwise, you won't find that kickoff approval to have suitable employers.
And I take it then, Nick, that IOPSA is currently or constantly, if I can put it that way, looking for lead employers, for employers who are willing to accept apprentices.
Very much so. We promote that continuously. And there's an improvement in the numbers from where we started 2 years ago with willing participants from an employer side. That willingness have increased more and more.
Do you think that that is due, Kwaku, is that due to the fact that those employing companies or employer companies, have they started to realize the value in this apprenticeship program?
Yes, certainly. The awareness has grown over the past 2 years. And secondly, the benefit is becoming more and more, you know, publicized. You know, people are starting to talk about it. So it's easier now. For example, last year, in the beginning of the year, when I compare that time with, you know, where I am now, it's easier for me to get an employer when I'm struggling to place a learner than it was at that time. So it's a function of awareness. Obviously, we run campaigns from time to time, you know, sending out, you know, communication to our members and saying, guys, we've got, you know, apprentices to mentor. So that repeated message is definitely, you know, increasing the awareness. Yeah.
So, Nick, Willem. So, Nick, you know, if I go and have a look at it, and based on our experiences we've had, we've seen a lot of employers take youngsters on, you know, and they'll be there for 3, 4, 5 years. And at the end of it, you know, just be told, right, go and do your Section 28 or whatever sort of you're going to be doing. So from what you and Kwaku are explaining in terms of this process, we're getting a much better developed individual coming out of this because it's structured and it's actually facilitates everything from start to finish. Am I correct in saying that? So there's definitely an added value for the employers to be a part of this program, to be able to start and finish.
Yes, Steve, the curriculum has been updated, being a little bit more comprehensive. The training methodology has evolved to a more improved component. And the actual trade test, you've mentioned the Section 28, which was 5 tasks known to be in the test, and everybody trained towards passing those 5 tasks that is specified. The new trade test that will kick in January of 2021 for these learners that is in this new occupational qualification for the last 2 or 3 years, there is similar tasks, but there is a whole lot of new permutations of how do you install a toilet on the ground floor, on the second floor, and maybe on a high-rise building. Installing the toilet is the same, but the actual connection with the outlet pipes becomes a issue, and that becomes a knowledge that needs to be part of the training. So you are correct. The quality of the apprentice post this new trade test will be of a higher caliber than the previous system that we have used.
And I think, Nick, I mean, you're 100% there, and I think it's going to give us a more rounded sort of apprentice coming out with that theoretical knowledge and obviously the alternatives in terms of how installations get done. But I think in terms of IOPSA, you know, and with the two of you being, you know, part of this, I mean, this is leaps and bounds, you know, in terms of where we were many years ago, Nick, you know, from where we had nobody that would, you know, talk to us, that now from an IOPSA perspective, we're right at the coalface in terms of training. And how would you put that down to? What would you put that to? That, you know, all of a sudden, now we're involved in all of these training initiatives and other projects that you have. What is that based on?
I think the involvement of IOPSA has improved, changed from where we've been 10 or 15 years ago to where we are presently, because as a body, we have advocated improvement and upliftment of skills within the plumbing industry. Government has recognized it. Government is now approaching IOPSA for guidance in terms of the training. And because of the upliftment, the quality has improved in leaps and bounds, similar to if you compare what's happening presently in the plumbing fraternity, similar to what happened in your computer world, from where we had a computer doing this, and today you have a computer in your pocket, which was similar to, I don't know how big the computer was when we sent the first man to the moon. That evolvement has also taken place within the IOPSA training system. And I am very proud in terms of saying that if we look at, Kwaku mentioned that in the centers of specialization, there's 13 trades. The plumbing trade is far, far ahead of any other of those 13 trades. And if you use, yeah, all of them are on an occupational qualification level, but IOPSA stroke the plumber is the only trade that has a professional body operational to add to this quality of an artisan post training, but it also influences the training that takes place in the initial phase.
Just before we continue the conversation, it's time to hit the brakes again.
Plumber training has never been easier with articulated plumber courses. Enroll now to upskill yourself at your own pace and earn CPD points. Our informative and easy to follow courses can be found on iopsatraining.co.za. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Articulated Plumber.
Kwaku, just getting back to the fact that the awareness have grown and the awareness of the benefits of your programs has grown and increased, is it now in this day and age harder to place female apprentices than male apprentices?
Okay, the reality of them is that it's challenging with some companies to place female apprentices. You know, the industry hasn't grown, you know, it's a bit behind with how it views women. We, from time to time, you know, hit that wall where we have, you know, females, a number of females that are sitting without an employer month after month, and then we get a placement for one female, and then they don't want to take the remaining ones and so on. So there's an issue there. One of the reasons that they are mentioned from the industry are that, you know, on site there are no facilities that specifically cater for the different sexes. And then secondly, the workers on site are not yet, I would say, advanced or developed or prepared in terms of the how to manage the relations between, you know, men and women at work. So the construction industry is still very male dominated, and so that impacts on the uptake of ladies. Yeah.
Although you find yourself in some form of challenges that you face in that regard, but is it improving?
Okay, I'd say what I've experienced is, it seems to me, it appears, I'm not sure about Nick's, like, you know, what he's been exposed to. It looks to me as though from province to province, the provinces don't seem to be behaving the same. I find that here in Gauteng, for example, that problem is almost non-existent over here. All my ladies here are placed. And I didn't even have to go through any major hardship. But then in a province like PE, there's constant issues there of women not being placed. So it looks like it's a provincial thing as well. It's not necessarily that much of a scientific statement. But what I'm mentioning here, I accept what I've experienced. And also you have to consider the fact that PE, we've got a smaller pool of plumbing companies, and so there are.
Just a question. So what happens to these ladies that you're unable to place?
Now, eventually they get placed, right? It's people that just started this year because they started at the college, it's now a company block. So they eventually get placed. It's just that it takes longer for them to be taken, especially if it's a high number. You know, for example, it's 5 ladies that I've got in my hands, and I've got to place them now. So it's definitely going to take time. But then,
and in terms of performance, you know, because you know, I'm a girl, I know, I'm a plumber, so it's like to just like put it out there. So in terms of performance, though, how are the women faring against the guys? I mean, I know for a fact that we do very well, but I just want confirmation.
I can confirm that, ladies. You know, with the compliments that we got from the employers, it's interesting that we were told that there are ladies that do very, very well. They are more disciplined. They are more structured in the way they approach work and so on and so forth. All these qualities of a female, they sort of kind of put them at an advantage compared to males. It's just fears that employers have. The industry not being ready for them, but it's nothing. There's nothing from the ladies' side that suggests that they are a sort of a threat in the industry.
Thank you for clearing that up. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Lorraine had to have that say there, but I think also, you know, I think experience shows, and I think that, you know, again, I think it's just something that we need to work on in terms of getting that mindset changed, and I think IOPS can play a huge role in that. You know, as we've seen, you know, many ladies in the industry have certainly made a huge impact in terms of how they, you know, we've had some ladies that are auditing. We've, you know, Nick and I dealt with some ladies with Skills for Green projects years ago, and certainly the commitment was there in terms of that. So I think Kwaku and Nick, it's just something that we need to just change that mindset and look at the value that, you know, these ladies bring to the table. And I think it's again just for us to work on that and see people as, you know, as they are, that they're going to add that benefit and maybe some better than others. But, you know, it's just to try and open that mindset and clear it.
It is a mindset change that needs to take place within the industry, but I think more so from a community point of view moving up. And you're quite correct in terms of positive feedbacks that we have. You would find that there's more positive feedbacks on females than what there's positive feedbacks on males, although the numbers could be then the opposite. And we go way back to our Skills for Green Jobs 4 years ago. There was, out of the 27, 5 ladies, of which one lady, it took us 5 years, but she is presently a qualified artisan plumber. So it just shows, and there was no male in that same category. Their perseverance and things are commendable. Thank you.
Either Kwaku or Nick, what exactly are the requirements for students to join these programs of yours?
So the minimum requirement is grade 9 with maths and English. So that is the requirement.
Just in terms of the maths, are we talking about pure maths or are we talking about maths lit?
Nick, I think it's even maths literacy. Am I correct?
Maths lit is the minimum. You will find that with the new occupational qualification, there's an overriding requirement, which is called a foundation learning competency, that the candidate must display prior to be admitting to the final trade test, which is on par with our present matric certificate, with around about the 50% pass, including maths literacy. So if they go to the grade 9, as Kwaku have stated, they might be required to upskill their general education level to meet that foundation learning competency, which is basically language and numeracy skills that they have.
Just before we say goodbye, it's time to hit the brakes one last time. We'd like to encourage our audience to follow Articulated Plumber on Instagram and Facebook, not only to find out more about the Man in the Van podcast, but also to learn more about any exciting and interesting news that we may have. Our handle on both Instagram and Facebook is Articulated Plumber. Nick, have you got any last statements that you would like to make to the audience out there?
My closing statement would just be, ladies and gentlemen, it is cool to be an artisan, and I look forward to those that wants to join a very rewarding career in plumbing.
Kwaku, yourself, any last words for the audience members out there?
Yeah, I'd say the country with the projects that we mentioned, it's quite clear that strategically the direction now is for people to we need more youth to aspire to be artisans than people trying to wear ties. Somebody mentioned, I think it's Nick who mentioned, the fact that it's rewarding. A lot of people driving vans around, millionaires. It's just that they don't look like pop artists. Nothing funky about them, but their bank accounts are really cool. So there's never been a more exciting time for artisans than now. Yeah. So we look forward to having them on board.
Kwaku and Nick, thank you so much for your time and your effort in joining us in this conversation. Thank you to my two anchors, Ms. Lorraine Moy and Mr. Stephen Brown. I do appreciate your time and effort as well. Thank you to our audience members for having listened and tuned into this conversation and this specific episode. We do hope that you've learned valuable information from this episode. Finally, it's time to switch off this engine. Cheerio.
Man in the Van Podcast, your regular audio drive time companion.